This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 25th at 12:40 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like no one will notice that suddenly Fox News is unconcerned with the age of presidential candidates, while MSNBC suddenly is worried about age. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who can quickly come to an agreement when they really need to. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, so much for turning down the temperature of political rhetoric, a stunning comment at an Ohio rally. But first, things have changed since last week.
I believe my record as president, my leadership in the world, my vision for America's future, all merited a second term. But nothing, nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation.
Indeed, President Biden has passed the torch. We have a new likely Democratic nominee for President of the United States. No doubt you know the story. Biden had a terrible debate. His standing in the polls nosedived. Money dried up. Congressional leaders jumped ship. And Sunday afternoon, President Biden announced he was stepping aside. Within 48 hours, Vice President Kamala Harris vacuumed up enough Democratic support to secure the nomination. To say last month has been a whirlwind is insulting to whirlwinds. Joining us now is a man who has been through this process. He's been through the candidate nomination process. He's held office. He's been a candidate. He's recruited candidates and guided them to Election Day. We're joined by former Ohio Democratic Party Chair David Pepper. David, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thank you. I wish I could say I've been through this, but every week is sort of unprecedented. But I guess I've been through sort of simpler versions of this in the past.
Can you believe it has only been a month since the Biden-Trump debate on June 27th?
It is amazing. And I will say I watched the debate with my younger brother, who's not that political, which is actually often the better way to watch things like this.
Indeed.
At the end of the debate, it was such a poor performance by Joe Biden that my brother said, David, we just watched history.
Yep.
And I think that was the beginning of this historic, three, 4 weeks, where it truly has been unprecedented. The debate, obviously, the horrible assassination attempt and the switch, last night's speech. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really, we've all been observing something that was, you know, as much as the times are up and down, unimaginable, you know, mid-June.
Yeah. Let's talk about the decision by President Biden, his speech to the nation from the Oval Office. What did you think of it? Was it right? Was it the right decision?
I think it was something we see so rarely in politics today, which is someone who put service over self. You know, we talk about this all the time. You know, we wish it was there were more public servants and people who understood that this is about the country and a broader public good more than it's about their own ambition or things that make them feel important. But lately, it feels like no one makes decisions like that anymore. And here someone did. And he talked about it in that way. And I thought it would get at some point lead to this. And there just still, though, are not a lot of people who in the end say, I'm willing to even give up a presidency that I feel that like I've done a good job. And there are a lot of numbers to support him thinking that, you know, economic recovery, you know, getting us out of COVID, respect on the world stage again. Even with all the things he could have talked about for the coming months, he reached a conclusion that democracy was more at risk, given how he did that debate and a lot of the questions after. He's willing to give all that up. That I think down the road, this will be seen as, and Joe Biden will be seen as someone who epitomized a public servant, even willing to put that level of sort of personal ambition to the side for the good of the country. So I just think of it as a sort of a very American patriotic moment, going back to, you know, why Kennedy wrote the book Profiles on Courage decades ago. And so I think for that reason, it really is going to be something that, again, will be seen as historic and is something that's far too rare at this sort of wild and often dark time of American politics.
You know, I prefer the term realist to cynical, but in my realist experience, it seems like politicians, candidates, incumbents, even challengers, drop out of races when they really decide they cannot win, or they decide not to seek re-election when they realize they cannot win. How much of that went into Joe Biden's decision versus what you talk about, service, self?
You know, here's the problem, and I've seen this, you mentioned I've been part of campaigns, I've been part of recruiting. Politicians don't believe they cannot win often. It's a problem.
Yeah,
they keep right on going, even when they think, even when everyone else would say they can't win. Certainly, it's clear the last few days of the pressure cooker that led to his decision. Clearly, if you look at the TikTok, they were getting information that the polling was struggling in swing states, that people weren't there for him. At the same time, you know, Joe Biden was told in the same exact way, going into that South Carolina primary in 2020, you're never going to win. You're finished, which he was. He had lost badly in Iowa and New Hampshire. That guarantees you're going to lose. So, yes, he was being told he couldn't win, probably by some, by people he didn't want to hear from. But he'd been told that before. And in his mind, that never stopped him before. And he was president. So I do think that was clearly part of it. But at the same time, I think he also, the stakes and the risk of him losing perhaps weighed much more than even back in 2020, yeah, where he thought, well, maybe I still think I can win. Maybe others don't think I can. But am I willing to roll the dice with democracy itself in the balance? I think it was clearly a combination. But oftentimes people literally would still cling to the power versus what he chose to do. And when I don't want to be general here. I'm talking here about people in 2020 and 21 who chose not to impeach Donald Trump that would have eliminated all this risk because of shorter term self-serving reasons when they knew full well that he had pushed for January 6th. So we are haunted right now by people who knew as much as Joe Biden did about his chances, knew that Donald Trump had done what he did, knew it had been proven, but voted no against impeachment because of other factors.
Now, could Joe Biden have put country above self 2 years ago and said, you know, I'm going to be 81 years old when the campaign begins, and I'm not getting any younger. I'm a transition president. Let's let the next generation, let's pass the torch now. That would have allowed for a more traditional primary, the vetting of Democratic candidates, and arguably whoever came through that process, whether it be Kamala Harris or somebody else, would have been a stronger candidate.
I mean, yeah, that's obviously, if he'd reached that conclusion 2 years ago, that would have allowed a smoother process now, but he hadn't, he didn't.
Yeah.
I think they were, first of all, working very hard to fix the economy, but thinking by any measure, the record they put together is the record that gets someone reelected. I mean, the economic numbers are through the roof. The other things are very positive. Obviously, there are things to fix as well. But I think they're looking at, you know, his State of the Union speeches have always been strong. And the record of what he's put together, given what he inherited, the disaster, this gets lost. I mean, he inherited a disaster, cratering economics, not out of COVID, et cetera. So I think there 2 years ago, I think almost nobody would think, while they were sort of, you know, racking up victories, well, I'm doing all this, but I'm not going to run.
Yeah, you don't know the aging process is like. He could have been much. I don't want to. We won't know. We may know someday, but we don't know how quickly this aging process has affected him.
I'll be honest. I had never seen. I mean, the debate was eye opening. I mean, I hadn't seen that either. I had seen State of the Unions that were strong, and I'm not an insider, so I haven't been in a room where I would have seen it. But yeah, my father's in his early 80s. My mom's in early. You see it, and perhaps it came up quickly. But so maybe everything they were looking at 2 years ago was he's doing okay. He's, or put it this way, he's the same guy who won 2 years before. Yeah.
And Nancy Pelosi is 84.
Very strong.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi is 84, and she's still as vibrant as ever. She's not the speaker anymore, but she's very vibrant. So let's turn to where we go from now, from here. Right. We've seen the bump.
But that's a fair question, just to be clear. I think that's perfectly a fair question.
Yeah. We've seen the bump with Kamala Harris. $100 million donated in one day, tens of thousands of new volunteers. Certainly, it is a level of excitement that Democrats have not felt in many months. How long does this last?
Well, if done right, it keeps lasting. It builds. I think I saw a tweet the other day that, you know, the next couple of weeks could be very important because she's new enough to a lot of Americans that she's undefined. And I think she has and her team have to define her quickly. And Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and others will try and define her quickly. So I think if done right, this could be the beginning of a strong, you know, growth, knowing at the same time that the other side will try and define her. I saw an ad already that they put together. I saw it online. I think they need to really very quickly. And this is one reason why I think the coalescing around her was important. I think that there's a real rush to make sure she's defined the right way before you let your opponents define you. They're clearly trying to do that in some horrible ways, by the way. And the other side is, and you know, it builds to the convention. I think, by the way, so Donald Trump, I think, really laid an egg picking J.D. Vance. I think on any sort of political merit, Vance was a bad pick. And now it looks even worse in hindsight. On the flip side, Kamala Harris has multiple opportunities to go. But the other problem for Trump is the convention's over and they ran the whole convention against Biden. And now the opponent's new. So they kind of blew their shot. Well, Kamala Harris has two big moments coming up besides debates, which I hope she'll do every week. One, she gets to pick a vice president. That's another surge of energy, whether it's, you know, Mark Kelly or Shapiro. That person will look far more qualified and experienced than J.D. Vance does, who's been a senator for a year and a half. And number two, then Kamala Harris will have a convention where the Biden record will be touted, and then the excitement of that new ticket will be touted. So I think that if you do it right, there's a natural upswing. And there also are big moments that Trump's already gone through that Kamala Harris has in front of her, an exciting ticket that will look far better than Trump-Vance, that will be broader than Trump-Vance, and a convention to highlight it all. So I actually think there's a lot of opportunity in the coming month and a half to build on this.
Looking at the political operation, how hard is it for a large party, a party operation, a large campaign to pivot? Now, it helps that she was already a part of the ticket. So it's Biden-Harris, now it's just Harris.
Right.
But it still has to be very difficult, especially with 100 days to go, to change.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard. I think you said it, though, being part of the ticket versus starting from scratch. If you had had 3 or 4 weeks of a scrum, then everything would have been on hold. And then you'd have to rethink the whole thing. And so I do think that helps. And then, you know, obviously you have the VP. The one thing that's interesting is, and this is somewhat not coincidental, but the campaign manager of the Biden campaign was an old Kamala Harris staffer, an old as in she'd been with her for a while. She's younger than me, so I shouldn't say it that way. But who I saw when I helped, we had Kamala Harris come through Ohio when I was chair. That's this person I worked with. So she's now the manager, and some of the key people in the Biden campaign, they've already said will be leading the Harris campaign. So I think it's about as smooth as it can be, but obviously, as you're saying, you know, that's not easy and it's quite late in the game. But I think key personnel will be the same, and they are going to have to, sell the Kamala Harris vice presidency. And given all the talk about Biden's age, Biden's vice president was already going to take a bigger role in the campaign anyway. So I think it's probably about as smooth as it gets versus starting over, but certainly there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, she was doing as many, if not more, appearances before the debate. She was doing as many or more campaign appearances as President Biden was.
And to be honest, this is no disrespect to Biden, but she will be a more nimble debater. I mean, you saw that in past appearances. She will be a little more, she'll be able to roll with it more in events. I mean, that's the advantage of being sort of her younger age. So I think there's a reason Trump is all of a sudden looks kind of scared of debates. He should be. It won't be the same as June 27th. So, yeah, she brings some other skill sets that really change the energy, you know, differential in this race. I think she would be a far stronger debater than the guy we saw Trump be a few weeks ago, where he lied throughout it all and said some really bizarre things while he was at it.
As far as the Electoral College is concerned, Americans were not ready to elect a woman president in 2016. Has anything changed since then? Is America ready to do it in 2024?
I hope so, but I also think there was a context of 16 that was far more than is America ready. It was after 8 years of Democrats being in power. I think there was a true assumption, I think, on the Democratic side that, oh, Trump could never win. Other problems.
Hillary Clinton's unpopular.
I'm a fan of Secretary Clinton, but yeah. she wasn't viewed as new. I mean, as I think it was viewed, Kamala Harris, I think, might have some new excitement to her that a Clinton didn't have at that time. So I think that there's a different context. I do think it's changed some. What's funny is I hear a lot of what people say about Kamala Harris, what we heard early on when Obama was running. Oh, America's not ready for that. I'm telling you, the turnout was energetic because a lot of people were. And I think this really impacts Ohio, I think. The Kamala Harris presidency, and we're already seeing it in voter registration numbers in the $100 million plus, I think there were a lot of voters who might have shown up sort of for Biden grudgingly because they were scared of Trump. Younger voters, diversity of voters. I think those voters now are going to be engaged. And that, I don't know if that's going to turn Ohio blue for the presidency. I hope it does. But that's a great thing for Sherrod Brown. That's a great thing for the effort to end gerrymandering. Having the sort of older Obama coalition voters that were not as energized, I think, the last couple of years, get energized. You can't take it for granted, but this is the opportunity if the campaign works hard. You re-energize that coalition, and that could really change election outcomes up and down the ballot. And that's something I think Kamala Harris's candidacy at the top brings.
We shall see. My thanks to former Ohio Democratic Party Chair David Pepper. David, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster.
Wow, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. Remember, after the attempt to assassinate former President Trump, nearly every elected leader and candidate called for everyone to tone down the political rhetoric. We honored that unified civil message last week here on Snollygoster, but we feared it would not last. It didn't. 9 days after the shooting, Ohio State Senator George Lang of suburban Cincinnati got worked up at vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance's rally in Middletown.
Time. Come on. Hey, we are in the fight for the soul of our nation. We are in a fight for our kids and our grandkids, a fight that we can never imagine. I believe wholeheartedly Donald Trump and Butler County's J.D. Vance are the last chance to save our country politically. I'm afraid if we lose this one, it's going to take a civil war to save the country, and it will be saved. It's the greatest experiment in the history of mankind. And if we come down to a civil war, I'm glad we got people like Schmitty and the Bikers for Trump on our side.
As disturbing as the comment itself, the nodding heads and that applause from the crowd, Lang apologized fairly quickly, saying he got caught up in the excitement of the moment, and he said the remarks do not accurately reflect his views. Fair enough. But you know what they say. A political gaffe is the truth by accident. So, for calling for a civil war, then saying he didn't mean it, State's Editor George Lang gets our Snollygoster of the Week Award. No word yet on whether Schmitty and the Bikers for Trump endorsed that idea. We'll get to that next week. Anyway, that'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.